I'm Jan McCarthy. You're listening to The Life of an Entrepreneur, coming to you from SkidRowStudios.com in downtown Los Angeles. And thank you all for tuning in. We're live streamed every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we're real radio on the internet. And my show is dedicated to entrepreneurs. We'll be sharing business tips, topics, and meaningful talk with other entrepreneurs. And so very excited to have you all here. I'm the founder and creative director of Entrepreneurial Voice, and I provide entrepreneurs with the tools, resources, advice, and counsel to help launch their dream or grow their business. And today, I'm so excited to have in our studio Andrea Buchanan. She's an author, a writer, and an entrepreneur. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy. So you're a writer and you're a director. And sometimes people don't think of themselves as an entrepreneur unless they've opened up a storefront or they have like an actual business where they're making money every day. How do you define entrepreneurship for you? And when did you recognize that you too were an entrepreneur?
Well, let's see. I think it came at a dinner party with my husband, who is an entrepreneur. He's got a real job, but he also is an entrepreneur at heart and has started some businesses and is continuing to do that. And I've always called him the entrepreneur. And then we were at a dinner party with a fellow business school graduate friend of his, and he called me an entrepreneur, and I fought him on it. I'm like, I'm not one of those entrepreneurs, because I really could not like possibly see that that's what I was. Or that's what I'd call myself. I was very specifically a writer, a producer, a director. I'd done all these different things, but it was always under the vein of the entertainment industry and, a creative person. And so when he called me an entrepreneur, I kind of fought him on it. And then he schooled me and told me that, you are taking risks. You are coming up with ideas that have not been there before, whether it's a character or a storyline or a show, or you're seeing a possibility that doesn't exist that could be there. And the risk taking, I think, was the biggest part for me. I had just published my first book, and I didn't know it was going to be published by a big, I didn't know any of that when I started. I really just had to have a leap of faith. And so I don't know if that's necessarily how I would have ever seen myself had it not been for this dinner party. And now, you and I have gotten to talk a bit about it too. And I think I'm happy to call myself that. I mean, it's an honor, truly.
Fantastic. Guess what? We have a caller. And so are they still there? Hi, welcome. What's your name?
Hi, it's Meredith.
Hi, Meredith. How are you? Where are you calling
Hello.
From?
I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Hi, welcome. Do you have a question?
Hi. I did. I wanted to ask what Andrea thought, or both of you thought, was the most important quality that an entrepreneur should have so one could identify themselves perhaps as one. What would be the most important quality?
You answer it, Jan.
Well, I actually think you just did, and that's someone who's willing to take risk. Someone who is willing to kind of put themselves out there and follow their passion and stay true to that and be authentic with that. What do you think?
That sounds like someone that I would love to aspire to be even more than I have been. I have many friends that are absolutely risk takers and joy seekers and opportunity providers to other people because of their desire and dream to start a business or create something new. So there has to be a reality check too. There has to be one of those, like, how do I get started? What do I do? And that, if you cannot let that stop you, that first initial step, then you might have something going there, Meredith.
Well,
thank you.
There's a definition that I love that describes what an entrepreneur is, and it's a visionary self-starter who loves the adventure of a new enterprise and is willing to risk his or her own money. And I think having those qualities, which you just said, you were a risk taker, you love that adventure, you kind of love just exploring and creating. And so that to me is what the most important qualities are. And You have them, Andrea.
Thanks.
Thank you, Meredith.
I like that answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Meredith. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Andrea.
So thank you. So I love that your husband did that. I think that for entrepreneurs, oftentimes they do have a hard time owning it. And once you own it, then you can really just feel yourself start to soar and let yourself go when you do take that leap and follow that direction.
Can I interject? I just, mm-hmm. One more thing about that. I am in awe of what my husband's done in terms of his education and his businesses and the things he's started and his creative mind. And he's always been intimidated because he went to Berkeley and, NYU Business School. And I think the other part of me that was stopping myself from saying that I too could be an entrepreneur was the fact that I didn't have a business education, And I do believe people really equate the two, that you have to be schooled in business in order to then step out and have an adventure like that. So I also want to put that out there to people that isn't the case. It's helpful and it shouldn't stop you from going to school because that's amazing. And the things you learn and the people you meet are irreplaceable and undefinable in many ways, but it doesn't necessarily keep you from, it doesn't mean you have to have that in order to be an entrepreneur. So.
I love that you brought that up. To me, entrepreneurship is a state of mind, but you and I were just having a conversation earlier this morning and we were talking about something that I had done and I said, but I didn't have the formal education for that. And it's true. I think that does sometimes stop entrepreneurs from moving forward thinking, oh, I'm not qualified yet. I don't have the necessary knowledge or education to be able to get into this, but it's all a learning process. We're constantly learning, making mistakes, learning from those, moving forward, and finding out new information about how to create something and do something. So that should never be a deterrent. There's so much information available today on the internet to go and find out whatever it is that you need to find out. And also doing what I think is very hard for people to do, which is to ask for help. And did you ever have, you didn't come out just knowing exactly what you needed to do to publish a book or write a screenplay or direct a movie. So how did you, tell us a little bit about how you got started. And let me just say for our callers, if anyone does want to call in, the number is 1-800-893-9562. We would love to hear from you.
I followed my heart. I got started in this business because I knew I wanted to be in this business. It was one of those moved to Los Angeles from Texas and I didn't move here exactly to be in entertainment, but I wanted to a new start and a different perspective. And so moving to California was that. And I have always been creative and have been a storyteller, but I wasn't sure how to put that into action. So I just kept following. I just kind of was following my instinct, following what led me. And it led me into this world of documentary filmmaking and documentaries for television and telling other people's stories, a lot of biographies. I worked on Behind the Music for years. I was one of the most incredible experiences as far as starting out, cutting my teeth, was working on that show. I had the sad, sad job of traveling around with rock stars. And it was interviewing fascinating, cool people, icons and movers and shakers. Tom Petty comes to mind. And so that was sort of like, it was a freelance job. I wasn't necessarily entrepreneurship then, but getting that sort of experience led me to believe, well, first of all, my strong suit, I got to understand where my strengths lie, which is mm-hmm. in communications and telling people's stories and having conversations. And it sort of was a natural progression into a documentary film I made that I, spent all my own money making. It was a passion project and something I believed strongly in, which was reproductive freedom and the March on Washington, which was an extraordinary march for women's lives in 2004. So a bunch of friends and I got together and made this really cool movie. We made t-shirts to fund our movie. I'm not gonna lie, we were t-shirt manufacturers as well as
original crowdfunding.
There we go. I guess that's what that is. We sold $25,000 worth of t-shirts at the march.
Wow.
But we had five or six people going out with t-shirts and they were selling them. Now, the T-shirts are very politically slanted towards one party. And I won't go there because why do that now? But it was incredible. So we took that $25,000, dumped it back into the movie, and then realized we had a moneymaker on our hands. So we just kept manufacturing these T-shirts and sold them to all over the world. I mean, I still get stopped whenever I wear my T-shirt, and they'll say, "Oh my gosh, I bought one of those T-shirts." So that little idea and that logo and that T-shirt funded this documentary film, which was pretty extraordinary. And who knew? I had never made a T-shirt. I didn't, you know. And so this group of friends and I just, we all sort of pooled our talents and our strengths. And it was one of the most incredibly exciting times of my life. It started me in a political activation. I was politically activated in ways I'd never had been. I became really aware of the issues that were confronting our nation, and I got to do it all through telling a story, which was what I knew I was good at. And so that then led to another sort of part of my career, which was directing a short film, co-directing, and that I wrote, and it was an opportunity that it was given to me, and I took it, and then. From that, I was like, I need to keep telling these stories. And so I approached a publisher and said, I want to do a collection of stories of women and about hardships and how to overcome them. And, you know, I wasn't sure what it was called yet, but I put together this proposal. And it took me about 2 years to sell the book. And it was just a bunch of events that kind of came together that got me a really nice book deal. But I didn't know how I was going to accomplish this. I really had never done it before. So it was terrifying because once you get paid for a book, once you get an advance, you have to deliver that thing or you have to pay it back.
Right.
That's part of the business I wasn't aware of. So it was stressful, but it was fun. And, and I managed to pull something off and it did very well.
Well, you've touched on several things that I think is important for an entrepreneur to know. And first of all is recognizing what your strengths are and playing to those strengths. And when we get caught up in doing the things that we're not good at, we just get frustrated and sometimes just spin our wheels. So being able to concentrate on your strengths and saying, okay, this is what I know I'm good at and this is what I'm passionate about and driven to do, that's going to lead you to push beyond the boundaries that where you don't feel comfortable, like you said, when you were petrified at doing this. Sometimes there are mistakes that happen, like your T-shirts, that you don't anticipate that that's going to be the one thing that the public really responds to. And every entrepreneur needs to know how to tell their story. So the fact that that's what you do for a living, you already understand how being so authentic can really help to lead to credibility and help to build your brand and help to connect actually with the public and make them want to do business with you. I love that different things evolved and you followed your heart versus just following the money. That you made mistakes, but so what? And when you recognize that something was working, like the T-shirts, you continue to, like you said, to produce those. And that even without knowing it, I mean, crowdfunding is a very hot topic these days, but even without knowing that that's what you were doing, you figured out ways to help fund your project, whether it's, you know, starting opening up an ice cream shop or whether it's doing anything else. Sometimes we need help in funding that project. So you found ways to do that. So excellent, excellent, excellent.
I know. Who knew?
Who knew? Who knew? And sometimes some people do call themselves the accidental entrepreneur. There is such a term, I believe. What is it that you love most about being an entrepreneur?
I love that I get to some degree. I mean, it depends on deadlines and whatnot I've got going on now, but it really is my day to create, and I love the idea that there's never, you just don't know what's going to come of something. It's also very scary. There's many times where I've woken up and I'm just like, I'm just going to get a job. I can't, the uncertainty of it can be daunting. The uncertainty of you, on the one hand, you have everything in your control, and on the other hand, you are relying on people buy the T-shirt or say, that's a great book idea, I want to give you some money for it, or Yes, we love your screenplay. Let's make this happen. And so there's a, it's the thing I love, and it's also the thing that can be the most daunting. And I can see why people the who really need security don't see themselves doing that. It's just, it's a risk. It's a risk. But I do love the fact that I am my own boss, and it's, like I said, sometimes it's the thing that annoys the hell out of me, but for the most part, it's what I love the most about it. And that there's endless possibilities. And, you know, the, you can really direct your energy in a positive light if that's what you choose to do. I mean, if you think about the endless possibilities that are out there for all of us, if we want to make something happen, it's pretty cool.
Well, you, you've really been able to make a tremendous difference with the work that you do. You've written two books. One is Note to Self, which I love. And it's, like you said earlier, it's a story of women and how they, of various women and how they've overcome hardship. And I'm sure it's been inspiring to so many. And then you've just recently published your last book, Live and Let Love. And can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's in the same vein as Note to Self. Note to Self is an anthology of 30 stories told by women, hardship, heartbreak, humiliation, and overcoming it all. And I sort of pooled women from all walks of life. So there was the incredibly famous women, such as Sheryl Crow and Mariska Hargitay, and people that are, you know, very much in our zeitgeist. And then there was women that I have known for years, who I know their stories are so unbelievable, but they're not someone you may know of. And, you know, artists, professors, homemakers, every student, just every walk of life. And it is one of those things where I continue to get letters and emails. You just, when that day, that kind of day that happens to all of us, where you're just like, oh, what am I doing? It's, you know, what's going on? I need direction. And I get a lovely email from a student or a teacher whose student wants to write me a letter. You know, it's incredible. And so the second book is called Live and Let Love. And it's the same vein, anthology of women, strictly women, stories about love. And it wasn't just, hey, I found a cute boy and I want to date him, love. But it's all sorts of love, ranging from motherhood to, you know, the parents' love of a parent. One woman wrote about the love of her mother's voice and how, you know, this is really beautiful stories. And of course, authentic romantic love as well. And 28 women are in that, not 30. I don't know why we ended up with, I think it was just what we wanted to compile was 28. And it was, you know, equally as inspirational and wonderful experience. It was easier to do the second time, I have to say.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes when we've gone down that road and we know what
yes.
to expect, that's helpful. And you've already established some of the contacts. And that's something else that I wanted to mention is that, you know, understanding that you have to rely on other people. I mean, it's hard for us to do this all by ourselves, and being able to ask for help and being able to understand that, oh, maybe this person has information that can help me. That's a really great thing for entrepreneurs to know and to access, is being able to follow who those contacts are, get out there and network, and be able to ask for help when they need it. And I also wanted to touch on something. I've done this before on the show, I think that it's a common misnomer that, you know, getting a job, we sometimes think, oh, that's security. And yet we all know, especially in bad economic times, a lot of times those jobs, there is no getting a job and working forever and being secure with that. Mm-hmm. And even the most qualified and the most talented people can sometimes be let go from their job. So going out and getting that job, there is no security that you're going to get that paycheck every 2 weeks and have those insurance benefits. So I love entrepreneurship from the standpoint that I do feel like I'm in control. Mm-hmm. That yes, you do have to go out there and work and hope that somebody will buy that t-shirt or hope somebody will sign up for that course or buy your book or watch your movie or whatever it is that you've got that you're selling, but you have more control to do that than if someone else was managing that, mm-hmm. Managing that future for you. Because by the same token, whether you employ people or not, they're still relying on you to do that too. And that can be a heavy burden sometimes, but it also I think being an entrepreneur gives you more control over your life and your future as to whether you're able to provide for yourself mm-hmm. or not. So how do you, you're a writer, how do you motivate yourself? Do you have set office hours? Do you go to an office? Do you get up every morning saying, I'm going to write for 5 hours? What do you do?
It used to be different before I became a mother. So now I'm a new mom to a 16-month-old, and it's changed everything. Everything. You know, on the one hand, it's frustrating. I mean, I would never say she's the light of my life and the best thing that will ever happen to me without question. But it has changed my work. And I think it might have actually improved it, to be honest, because my time is so limited. I'm very fortunate to be able to have caregivers that can help. So I have, you know, it's part-time, like 20 hours a week. So that's really my writing time is 20 hours is what I have.
Okay, so you set that time aside that I'm going to write for 20 hours.
Right. I mean, that's my how much time we have babysitters. So
okay.
Now, out of that, so if, as you know, you're a mom. So that once the babysitter shows up and I'm on the clock or I'm off the clock with Ruby, but I'm on the clock with Andrea and her entrepreneurship, then I have things, I've got emails to return and, you know, things to do, a load of laundry to throw in if I'm at home, and easily get distracted. So it's made me really laser focused. And I used to have like this ritual and I had to do certain things before I would sit down, or it couldn't be a certain time of day before I would sit down to write. I was really like, you know, it was very much business hours, 9 to 5.
And that was before child.
Before child. And okay. Now it's 4 in the morning. I wake up and I can't go to sleep. I'll sit at my computer. Now it's, you know, after typically nighttime, I'm wrecked and my brain doesn't work that well. I'm a morning person. But it's definitely, I write before 9 all the time now because that's usually when she sleeps until then. And so it's given me the opportunity to really work the muscle of put your ass in the chair and make something happen. Because mm-hmm. really writing is about sitting there. You know, that's 90% of it. Sitting down and like, because it's not going to happen. A lot of your ideas and stuff, of course, happen out in the world on runs. Exercise is very important. It's without question the thing that, you know, will keep me motivated and keep me sane. But it's given me the opportunity to really exercise a different way of motivation and a different, just sort of out of necessity. You have this amount of time, so you've got to do it. So typically I try to exercise sometime in the morning, and if I'm not doing that, I'm sitting down to write before Ruby wakes up. Then I go feed her and do all the things, and then someone comes and helps, takes care of her, and then I have 4 to 5 hours to really get some stuff done. And I motivate myself by, it is, this is all you got, kid. make the most of it.
Right.
So it really has changed. And I think it's actually made me more productive.
Meaning that this is all the time you've got?
That's all the time I have, you know, and it's motivation by necessity. It just, you have to, and sometimes it's the last thing I want to do is sit down to, right now I'm in a very heavy writing phase of my career. I'm doing that more than most anything. A lot of it's by choice, but also it's just kind of what's, you know, where I've ended up. And so for this part, I don't think it's going to be the only thing I ever do, but it's great what I'm doing. I'm loving it, really, really loving it. So I guess the long-winded answer is, how do I motivate myself? I just do it. I exercise, drink some coffee, and just make it happen.
Well, I think I love that you said that, because a lot of times we feel like it just has to be out there, that motivation, that we're going to constantly be inspired to do this. And there are moments where it gets hard. It's not coming that easily. And so what do? I mean, we just put one foot in front of the other and we keep going. You're there, you make yourself do it. And sometimes that's really what you have to do. And then I would imagine as you get caught up in this from time to time, you get inspired, you get excited. Mm-hmm. There's that little light bulb that goes off in your brain and you think of something else and it just kind of, one thing leads to the other. But motivation isn't always there. And do you think setting that kind of routine, the fact that you've already set in motion that the babysitter is coming and this is the time that you're going to work, and it's like going to a job. Mm-hmm. Does that help?
It's been helping. Yes. It's, I thought it was going to be the death knell, but it's helped me. You know, it's helped me, A, realize I can get a lot done in an hour. I used to not think that, you know, but now I'm like, wow, you can get a lot done in 1 hour. We have some mutual friends. Meredith comes to mind, Cindy Finkel. There's many of them that are just, it's mind-boggling how much they get done in a day. And Cindy's one of those people for me who, she's like no nonsense. She just does it. And I always think of her because I've typically thought of all the reasons why I shouldn't do it and like forecasting and preventing myself before even stepping out to take the chance of whatever it is. And I think this practice now of this is the time you have to use it because it's not going to change no matter how much you want it to be longer or maybe shorter. It's it. This is it. You have to make the best of it. So it's a metaphor for life. You know, it's a metaphor for our lovely, blessed life. That make the best of it. So it's really what it's boiled down to per hour, per minute, for 30 minutes. The other day I got so much done in 30 minutes. It's like, look at that. You know, so it's been, you know, a challenge for sure to kind of get in the groove. But now that I'm back in it, post-mom, post-having Ruby, it's actually made me more productive.
Do you set deadlines for yourself?
Yes, without question. If I'm working with producers, you know, if I'm working something on something with a producer, they will come up with deadlines together. Or I've written things on my own and, you know, and I'm just writing for I don't know what yet. And I try to have deadlines. It's without question what works for me.
Yeah, oh, that sounds great. What advice would you, what is your best advice that you would give to other entrepreneurs?
I would give, you know, I've done a lot of speaking to people. When my first book came out, I had the, you know, it was awesome. I got to tour around and speak to people. And I had that question asked, how did you do this? You know, how did you blah, 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 get 30 women to say yes? And I think the best advice I would give is to believe in yourself and believe in your product or your project or your whatever it is you are envisioning and taking the risk on. Without that conviction, then you're sunk before you leave the harbor, you know?
Yeah.
And it's going to require, you know, it's one of the hardest things I've ever done was publishing that book. It was scary. It was terrifying. It was, you know, I lost some hair. I got a skin disease. I mean, it was like crazy. I was stressed out to the max. I had a lot of personal stuff going on too at home at the time, but it was a really hard time, that first book. It was hard and it was. So I would also say to people, you really have to want this more than anything because it will affect your life, you know, and it can end up affecting it in great ways. But you don't get all the wonderful gifts that come with succeeding in something without truly the hard work.
Well, I was going to say,
you don't really know how hard it's going to be, and if you did, you wouldn't do it.
Well, that's sometimes a question I ask: is if you knew how hard it was, would you go back and do it again? But would you?
I would.
So I was going to say with the book, I mean, with anything that you're doing, you really put yourself out there. So unlike some businesses where you might be able to hide behind it, it's not your product; you're just selling someone else's product or whatever. This there's a certain vulnerability that you have with what you're doing and being able to, like you said, really believing and knowing what your why is. And that's an important thing for all entrepreneurs to recognize, is what is their why and why are they doing this? Now, why did you feel so compelled to write that first book, to share these stories, to get this out there and feel that it was something that would be successful? What did you feel women or people needed?
The inspiration the moment I realized that this needed to be something bigger than, you know, just me sharing my story, was having the opportunity to write something in a groovy writers group called, what was it called? That Meredith did. Oh my God, I'm forgetting the name. If you're out there, call us and tell us. And it was, you know, a salon.
And oh, okay.
People would gather at the cafe, and the name will come to me by the end of this conversation. And she would pick six or seven readers to stand up and read these essays that they'd written about, you know, stories in their lives. And I wrote something about my very personal, very sort of hard experience as a teenager, and overcoming this illness that I got, a thyroid illness, which changed my entire appearance. You know, a junior in Texas, coming into your senior year, is not easy when you come back looking like someone different. This story was kind of my anthem, and I was really in pain about it for many years, and it affected my life in ways I always kind of assumed were negative. So when I sat down to write it, and I started to look at all the gifts in my life that had come from this happening, had this not happened to me, which at the time was a tragic happening, had it not happened, I wouldn't have probably left Texas, which ended up getting me, you know, I met my wonderful husband out here. I would not have met him. I mean, you do all the things. I wouldn't have had the career I had. So many things wouldn't have happened had I not gotten a thyroid disease and gained 45 pounds over a summer. My eyes bugged out of my head. You know, it was like one of those. So I realized what a healing process it was for me. And I wanted to give an opportunity to other women to share their stories, to sort of heal the pain and their shame and anything else that was attached to a time in their life when it was a very difficult time. And I knew that it would be incredibly powerful for the writer and for the storyteller, because I did a lot of the interviews and then I would ghostwrite for people, but quite a few people wrote their own story and I would edit with them. And I knew it would be an amazing, because it was so powerful for me to do it and it was life-changing, that I wanted to give that gift to other people. And then thought, well, think of the collective. You're at home reading this, you know, you take 10 minutes to read 12 pages of this miraculous story, and you know that you're not alone, that there is hope. And so it really was that, just trying to give other women the opportunity to understand they're not alone and that they too can get through whatever X, Y, and Z is going on for them.
Well, so many women launch a business from a place of pain or passion. And I won't say that that's always true, but men and women differ a little bit sometimes in that respect, whereas almost always from what I've seen is that they are launching a business from that place. And so I love that you took something that was painful, recognized what the gifts were from that, and then turned it into a passion, not only, well, if this helped me, then maybe it'll help someone else too, and was able to write a beautiful book. I've read your book. I loved it. I too was very, very inspired by it. I bought several copies and gave them to friends and family and loved it. So just that ability to be able to touch others and be able to do something that comes from a very passionate place is a wonderful thing to do, because that really kind of is your why, and that keeps you going. And when the struggle gets hard, like you mentioned, you've got to really believe in it. You've got to believe in yourself, and you've got to keep going with it. So you're a great example of that, that there have been tough times of moving forward and trying to figure out how to do things, but that you really believed in what you were doing. Now, is everything that you do and everything that you write of a similar vein to you in terms of inspiring people? And I know that there's a couple of things I want to make sure that we get a chance to talk about. And I also want to let our listeners know that they can call in and talk to us too. So 1-800-893-9562. We would love to hear from you. I want to learn more about the service work that you're involved in, and I want to know more about the other work that you do besides the two books that you've written and the articles. Do they all have that same theme kind of helping?
Most of the storytelling that I am involved in is the point of view is from women, and women's point of view, and women's, you know, it's just where I'm most comfortable, obviously. And a lot of my background in film, in even the behind the musics, I was always like called the diva girl. They gave me I did Sheryl Crow and Faith Hill and Mary J. Blige. So I've always been very comfortable in bringing out women's stories. And so I think the answer is yes. And then, you know, when I had a spell when I was trying to have a child, and it took a long time, And so I was in a lot of pain about it. And the only way I was getting through it was blogging about it. So I have this blog. It was, you know, an extension of my first book, Note to Self. But basically, I was just blogging about trying to have a baby. So, but in every, and of course, I would write about other things, but sort of tie it back to that. And I would end everything with a note to self. And it turns out that I got a lot of magazine work from that. You know, magazine editors were reading my blog and they would ask me to write something. You know, I got one asked, I was like crying all the time. And I got asked to write about crying. I was like, see, my tears have paid off. So all that crying finally paid off. And so, yeah, I think it's in my nature to share these really painful parts of my life, you know, so. I think the answer is yes. That's mostly, you know, the things I'm writing now are somewhat, I mean, they're all not necessarily exactly like that, but it's all about a struggle for women. The struggles we all go through. You can't escape it no matter who you are.
That's true. So tell me a little bit about more and more businesses are getting involved in a philanthropic arm, and you're involved too. In service. So tell me a little bit about the organization that you're involved in, how you got started, and where that came from.
I am a founding board member of Joyful Heart. It is called Joyful Heart Foundation, to say the correct term. And let's see, how did I get involved? I was asked...
And we can give that website too.
Yeah, the joyfulheartfoundation.org is the website. Not the, just Joyful Heart. I was, I am friends with the founder, and she had this inspiration and called me and said, she's actually happens to be an actress on a TV show called Law and Order SVU, and her name is Mariska Hargitay. And she was in desperate need to start this organization because she knew how many women out there needed it, which is we are... A support system. We started off as like a support system for survivors of sexual assault and child abuse and domestic violence, and a healing place for people. We were working a lot in alternative healing to bring out, you know, you can talk, maybe in talk therapy forever, but we wanted to go a step further and really help people get the joy back in their life, even though it was, you know, wiped out at some point in their life. And so it's grown. I mean, I've been involved for 7 years. We've been an organization for 7 years, and we are now, no, I'm sorry, 8 years, and maybe even 9 years. And we've reached millions of people. We have directly affected policy in cities all over the country to get these rape kits tested that sort of sit in the shelves of police departments. So it's truly one of the, you know, most important things that I've done as a person out there besides having Ruby is being a part of this organization. It's a huge honor and a gift, and it's a lot of work. I mean, we get shit done, as people like to say. So we're a working board. We're not just a check writing board. We really do our, you know, we're all getting our hands dirty all the time.
How long have you been doing that?
I'm trying to think when we were founded in 2004. Is that right? 2004. I think it was 2004 or 2005. I'm getting my years mixed up. We're about to celebrate our 10-year anniversary in like a year. So it's been a long time. 9 years.
Fantastic. Well, I think having something that is so meaningful to you and having a way to give back is something that's important for entrepreneurs to also take a look at. And a lot of times that is a why for people doing what they do, is wanting to have money to be able to give back to a charitable foundation. But you also don't have to just have money. You can also get involved in other ways too, and do the dirty work as well. And so it's great to see that you have not only taken your passion for helping people through your writing and through your business help them, but you've also helped to create this foundation that can help as well. Who inspires you?
My friends and my husband. We're very blessed to have so many awesome women that are doing great things, starting businesses, writing, acting, you know, really putting themselves out there on a daily basis. So I definitely, my inspiration are my friends and my husband, without question. And I mean, I guess if I wanted to go outside this sort of immediate sphere, who would it be? I mean, there's so many people I could go on and on. Gloria Steinem is way up there.
And why is that? Share why, how she inspires you.
Gloria Steinem. Oh my God. I mean, she was the original female entrepreneur, wasn't she? She, and political rainmaking, cultural, iconic shifter of our generation, I mean, of the feminist movement. So for any of us to be doing what we're doing as women, we needed her. That's how I look at her. She's, she was a journalist. She was a model or whatever. She Playboy, something. That was funny thing about her. And she did so many different things. But I think her mission was always to bring about equality for women. So in everything she did, that was her why. And she's phenomenal. You know, and Marianne Williamson's another huge inspiration. She is the, Alanis Morissette called her the other day, the best public speaker of her time. And I don't disagree with at all. Another woman who's, you know, put herself out there and believes in her mission, which is to make the world a better place. And she's made a lot of money doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's pretty cool.
I want to ask you, too, I loved when we first started talking and you talked about your strengths. How did you come to own those strengths? A lot of women have strengths, but they don't always own them and say, this is what I'm really good at. So how did you find the voice and the confidence to say, this is what I'm really good at? And did you always know that you loved writing?
Mm-mm. Oh, I was terrified. I don't want to blame anybody, but I just didn't have, I don't know what it takes as a parent, but my parents are incredible. And my father is an entrepreneur, and I've learned so much from him and have been inspired by him. But I didn't really have any direction. It was sort of, you know, just grew up in a different kind of time than the way I was raised my child, you know. So I didn't know, and I was probably, I had a lot of, I would imagine, self-esteem issues, you know. It's like we all go through at certain points in our life. So it was really trial by fire, to be honest. I'd love to say that I always knew I wanted to blah, 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 but I'm not that person. And it's been a blessing and a curse. You know, I don't have just one thing that you know, gets me. I think helping people and connecting, you know, the human connection, storytelling, that's the thing I can always go back to. But I'm interested in so many things. And I've had a hard time, you know, I am a political news junkie, like the best of them. And then I also love yoga, you know, self-help stuff. So I've kind of covered the gamut of here to here. And I've started to learn you don't have to be one thing. You know, you don't have to be a one thing. You can be many things. And, but yeah, I didn't know I was good at writing, and it took a lot of practice, and same with the sort of storytelling I was doing and what I was doing at interviewing people and crafting a story for television. It was like I kind of fell into it, for lack of a better word. I've always been told by people since I was old enough to remember, I just told you something I've never told anybody. People tell me that all the time. You, for some reason, I can't believe I just told you that. I've never told anybody that. And that's just stayed with me my whole life, you know, and it's, if you hear that enough in your life, you're going to start to go, oh, okay, so maybe I should keep interviewing people and keep drawing stories out of people and continue telling those stories. Maybe I should do that. That's something I'm good at. So I have no problem saying I'm good at it now, because I know I am. So, yeah. And that feels good. Took a long time, but feels good.
And isn't that good to know? Because there are a lot of women who go through life and they sometimes discount those little things about, even though people were telling you this, it didn't seem relevant. Like, how could I make a career out of this? I mean, I'm sure that never entered your mind when you were younger, or even when someone said, put down the things that you're good at. What are your skills? What are you great at? That might not have been the first thing that came to your mind, because it wasn't one of those things that was recognized as that you were great at math, or that you were a science whiz or right. that you knew how to spell words very well.
Yeah, that wasn't on the SATs.
Yeah.
How do you connect with people?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, in my interest in people, I mean, I just am interested in people. I talk to everybody. I love people's stories. Where'd you come from? How'd you get there? What did you do? I mean, I'm full of questions. I'm curious about the world around me and the people that inhabit it. And I think that's part of, you know, it has to be part of writing. Of course, you have to write about people, and you're not writing about yourself unless you are, then that's a whole other thing. But I think it goes kind of hand in hand with if I wasn't interested in the people around me, then I wouldn't have stories to tell, you know?
Right, right. Well, I love on your bio that you talk about what you did as a little girl when you would go out to the airport. Why don't you share that story?
Oh,
you can
yeah.
say it better than I can.
Yes. It was a long time ago when Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, which is one of the largest airports in the country, was first built, and we lived in the flight path of it. So not only was I watching the Concorde fly over my house every Sunday night, it was like an event. But it was the most exciting thing because it was a small town outside of a big city, but we were really isolated from Dallas. We were the fighting farmers, for God's sakes. And that was our mascot for the high school. And so I dreamed of being on that airplane, and I dreamed of going to faraway places, and I loved to talk to people that were not Texas. You know, it was like, so my girlfriend and I would go to the airport, and we would sit in the, it was when you could actually go up to the gates before security. And talked, where are you going? You're going to Paris? Have you ever been there? What's it like there? You know, that's what we would do for our fun, is go to the airport and sit in the international section and talk to people going to fun places. So, and it was like my lab, my own sort of lab of talking, asking questions, not being afraid to ask questions. And the answers you get are always really incredible. I'm one of the people, annoying people that will talk to you on the airplane.
Well, you're such a fascinating person that it would be exciting to sit next to you.
Not so much anymore. I think flying, you know, now I'm sort of like, I just want to read because I don't get a chance to read much, but I've met the most. My friends all make fun of me because, like, what do you do on airplanes? You come off these airplanes with these stories and people sending me sheets, and like, I'm at this Cotton King once, and I still get sheets sent to me from him, and I've met the most incredible people on airplanes, so I'm just telling you all, don't discount the person sitting next to you. You just never know.
That's right. That's right. Well, what I love, here's what I really love about the story that you're telling, is that really going back to be able to pinpoint that, because we get told, or we take a test, or we let other guidelines tell us what we're good at. And I love that you took something that you did, recognizing that, oh, I'm out here at the airport and I'm really curious about people. I love talking to people. I love hearing their stories. And maybe you even went home and dreamed up a story about them in your head or committed it, wrote it on paper. Recognizing your love for travel. I do. It is sad that we can't do that because I did that as a kid too. I would go out to the airport. That was our entertainment. I mean, you didn't have much
to
do.
So. You're watching the planes land.
How fun. That was very entertaining. You know, people watching is always very entertaining, but at the airport, it's even more so, you know, wondering where they're going. And
yeah.
I don't know that I was as brave as you to go out and ask them about all the questions, but definitely loved going and sitting in the airport, and it's kind of sad that you can't do that anymore.
I know.
I'm never sad when I actually get there early and I'm at the gate and I'm watching all the people. So
I feel the same way. It's endless, like the life that people lead and where everyone's going, and it's, you know, it's cool.
But the fact that you recognize that this is something that you loved to do as a kid, and you were able to extrapolate from those experiences some of the things, the qualities about yourself, and then how can I take those qualities? And maybe, yes, you got lucky, but maybe you also, that was in your subconscious, because in your mind, you were putting out there that I love to travel, I love people, I'm curious, I want to find out more, I want to share stories. And so in your subconscious, that led you to take actions that were putting you in that place that would eventually lead to you having the career that you have, the business that you've created for yourself. So, but I love that you recognize that, and it's important for us not to discount the smaller things that may not seem like, may not be something that we can actually just pinpoint right there and say, oh, okay, yes, I'm going to be a doctor or I'm going to be a writer, but things that kind of lead up to that. And that's what's really helping you to write authentically and brand you and be a part of who you are and how you're able to be successful. There are a lot of people who write books and they never get them published and they are never able to connect, unfortunately. But you were very passionate. You were very true to who you were. You're authentic about it. You didn't necessarily, in this particular case, feel like you had to tell just your story, but recognizing the benefit of bringing others in to share their story as well, to give a bigger picture and to broaden the scope of the information and the connections with different people. So those are all important, such important skills to recognize and employ as an entrepreneur. So
I'm
so thankful that you brought up something that most people may not necessarily think about when they're thinking about being an entrepreneur. Do you think entrepreneurs are born or do you think that they're made?
I think they're, oh gosh. I do think there's certain people that are born and there's no way they weren't going to, you know, create the next this or do the next that. I think that is, you have to be born with some innate sense of I'm okay putting myself out there. Some people just aren't, and that's fine. They're going to do other things that could, you know, change the world in other ways. But I think they're born and then they have to be fortunate enough to meet people like yourself, to, you know, ask the right questions, to surround themselves with the support. Because I do believe it's one of those things that you need support. You can't do it alone. I mean, of course, you are doing much of it alone, but I'm talking outside the actual building of whatever it is. You need good people around you to help buoy you. I've got a great husband. He supports me. There's no way in God's green earth I could have done any of this without him. Incredible friends that kept going, go, 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 you can do it, reminding me of who I am when I forget. And so I think you're born with it, but I think you have to then cultivate, foster, water the garden, tend to the everything in order for it to you know, come to fruition. So in that respect, I think you are made, you know. You were both born and made.
Yeah, well, I think I agree. I think that you're born with certain traits that will allow you to be successful, like such as some of us are just born risk takers, some of us aren't. Some of us are predisposed to doing certain things, and that will certainly help. I love that you mentioned having a support team. That's incredibly important. And I actually was thinking about what Meredith had asked earlier when she called and what is, I think she asked what one of the most important things is for an entrepreneur to have. And I think being a doer, taking action. You know, dreams are just best kept secrets if you don't do something with them. So as long as you're just thinking, as long as you're just thinking about all of it and not doing anything with it, then it's never going to go anywhere. And it's really important to take that first step.
I also think, just to add to that, is that you're not alone in being afraid. I mean, most of us that have wanted to do something, we all have the inner committee that's saying, oh, but right, and this can't happen, and you don't have enough of that, and we all have that. But, you know, you're not alone in the department of anxiety and fear, but fear is good. Fear is not a bad thing.
Yeah, it can definitely be a gift to drive you further. But having that support of people who will cheer you on, my Southern roots came out just now.
I know, we're both Southern.
having those people that will cheer you on and being able to turn the critics off and say, no, this is not okay. Believing in yourself, like you said, and moving forward. So to all those would-be entrepreneurs out there, take action, trust in yourself, believe in your dreams, go forward. And thank you so much, Andrea, for sharing your insight and your information. If you want to find out more about Andrea, it's andreabuchanan.com. And the books that she's written are Notes is it note or notes?
Note.
Note, note to self, which we all have note to self, right?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book. And also Live and Let Love. Thank you, Andrea, for joining me
today.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful. Thanks, Jan.